Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. And today we're going to be looking at the U.S. political landscape. You know, things are always changing.
Always shifting.
Yeah, always shifting. And we've got some pretty juicy stuff to cover this time.
We do.
Yeah. So Electoral Vote has been doing some great analysis, as always.
They always do.
And we're going to be taking a look at some of their recent articles to kind of get a sense of what's going on and what to watch out for in the coming years.
Yeah, and it's remarkable how these seemingly isolated events can kind of converge and create these like moments of political tension and opportunity. So that's what we're going to kind of unpack today.
For sure.
Starting with the Senate.
The Senate, exactly.
Yeah.
So first up, we've got Florida. And this is always a hotbed of political activity.
Oh, yeah. Always something going on in Florida.
Yeah. And we've got two Senate seats that are potentially up for grabs, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, that's going to be something to watch.
And it seems like every ambitious Republican in the state is eyeing these seats. So, you know, this could be a real bloodbath.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that Governor DeSantis' appointment of Ashley Moody to fill Rubio's seat was not a surprise to anyone.
To nobody.
She's already popular with voters.
Right.
So that's not really going to be an issue. But it does create another vacancy for DeSantis to fill.
Exactly.
But this appointment triggers a special election in 2026.
Right.
And now we have some big names like Representatives Kat Kamak and Corey Mills who are potentially jumping into the race.
So this is going to be a real showdown.
Yeah. And we also can't forget about DeSantis himself.
Oh, that's right. He's term limited.
He is.
In 2026.
Yes. So you've got all these ambitious Republicans, and they're all vying for a very limited number of powerful positions.
It's a lot of political ambition.
It is.
Yeah. So do you think all this infighting among the Republicans could actually open a door for the Democrats?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, Florida is definitely trending red. Ooh. It is.
But all this competition within the party, you know, it could create an opportunity for a strong Democratic candidate. You know, the Republican vote could get split among all these different contenders, and that could allow a Democrat to slip through.
Right, right.
I mean, it's a long shot.
Sure.
But, you know, it's definitely something to watch.
Definitely. And even if a Democrat doesn't win outright, there's still a potential upside for them, right?
That's right.
Because remember, several of the Florida representatives who are considering running for Senate or governor would have to resign their House seats once they qualify as candidates.
Right.
So that could shift the balance of power in those House races.
Absolutely. That ripple effect from the Senate race could have significant consequences down the ballot.
Yep.
You know, creating opportunities for Democrats to pick up seats in the House.
That's a great point. Yeah. All right. So let's switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
And head north to Ohio, where we've got another Senate seat about to open up.
Right.
Senator Vance is stepping down.
Yes, he is. Which leaves Governor DeWine with a bit of a tricky situation.
A tricky situation indeed.
He's going to coin a replacement.
Right. And his preferred choice, Lieutenant Governor Husted, seems more interested in running for governor than taking a Senate seat.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So that kind of throws a wrench in the works.
It does.
And it brings us to a rather surprising contender.
Okay.
Vivek Ramaswamy.
Vivek Ramaswamy, the venture capitalist.
Yes.
With, shall we say, limited political experience.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah, that would be an interesting choice.
Some are speculating that this could be a strategic move by DeWine. You know, maybe a favor to former President Trump, who, according to some sources, is looking to, shall we say, redirect Ramaswamy's ambitions.
Oh, so get him out of his hair, basically.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah, so DeWine appoints Ramaswamy, potentially gets him out of Trump's orbit, but then risks losing the seat to Sherrod Brown in the 2026 special election.
Exactly. It's a gamble.
It is.
And appointing someone with little political experience to such a high-profile position, you know, it could backfire on the GOP.
Yeah.
On the other hand, having Ramaswamy in the Senate for 2 years, that could present some challenges for both sides of the aisle.
I can already see the headlines.
I think we all can.
Oh, man. All right. Well, this is just the beginning, and we've already got a lot to unpack. But before we dive into how the media is adapting to this new political landscape, let's take a moment to consider what all of this means for you, our listeners.
That's right, because these Senate races, you know, they may seem like these distant political games, but their outcomes can have a real impact on your life.
Absolutely.
You know, they can influence the direction of policy, the confirmation of judges, and even the balance of power in Washington. Mm-hmm. So it's important to stay informed and engaged because what happens in Florida and Ohio, it could ultimately affect all of us.
Excellent point. Okay, so let's move on to how the media is navigating these choppy political waters. Things are already getting pretty interesting with some media outlets seemingly trying to stay in the good graces of the new administration.
It's fascinating, isn't it, how the media landscape shifts
Yeah.
and evolves in response to these political changes.
It is. Yeah, it really is. It's a delicate dance they have to do right.
It is.
Like, maintain their journalistic integrity, but also navigate the reality
Right.
of, you know,
New political climate.
A new political climate. Yeah, and we're seeing some
interesting
examples of how they're trying to do that.
Yeah.
Like, take the Washington Post, for instance. You know, they've been known for their, you know, hard-hitting journalism, especially with that democracy dies in darkness slogan.
Right.
But lately, there's been this, like, subtle shift
in
their tone and their strategy.
They've definitely toned down the democracy dies in darkness thing.
Yeah, they have, haven't they?
And that new mission statement, riveting storytelling for all of America. It's a little...
Ambiguous, softer. Yeah.
Softer, yeah.
A little bit.
Like, are they trying to, like, not be a target?
Yeah, it makes you wonder.
In this new political environment.
Yeah.
And it's not just the slogan, right? They're also putting a lot of emphasis on, like, happy customers and making money.
Which sounds more like a business strategy
yeah.
than a commitment to...
Investigative journalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. This shift seems to coincide with several, like... high-profile journalists leaving the paper.
It does, doesn't it? So
yes, certainly.
It's a development worth watching.
Yes, definitely.
And then there's this whole plan to become like an AI-fueled platform for news.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta say, that makes me a little uneasy.
Yeah, it's a bold move for sure. And it's not without its risks. You know, relying on AI to curate and deliver the news
right.
raises all sorts of questions about potential biases.
Right.
And, you know, the spread of misinformation.
Right, because the algorithms are only as good as...
the data they're trained on.
The data, exactly.
Yeah, that data can be, you know, flawed or incomplete.
Right, it's like they're prioritizing speed and efficiency over, like, accuracy and depth.
Yeah.
You know?
I hope they don't lose sight of
right.
the importance of, like... careful human-driven journalism.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's a crucial balance.
It is in
to strike
for sure. And it's not just the Washington Post either. Like CNN also seems to be making some adjustments.
They do.
They've reportedly moved Jim Acosta.
Oh yeah.
You know who?
He wasn't exactly
Trump's favorite.
No, he was not a fan.
From his primetime slot to
the midnight hour.
The midnight hour. That's a pretty big demotion.
It is.
You know, it's got to be a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah. The overnight shift is often seen as a less desirable slot in TV news.
Right.
So moving Acosta there,
yeah.
you know, it could be interpreted as a way to minimize his visibility.
Right.
And, you know, potential for controversy.
It's definitely a sign of the times.
It is.
Yeah. And speaking of CNN, there's this fascinating defamation lawsuit that was filed against them by Zachary Young.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Navy veteran who's been extracting refugees
right.
from Afghanistan and other dangerous places.
Yeah, this case has been getting a lot of attention.
It has.
Especially from right-wing media outlets.
Right.
Young claims that CNN defamed him by implying that he was engaged in illegal activities during his work extracting Afghans.
So basically, Young was charging this substantial fee
right.
to help these Afghans escape.
Uh-huh.
And CNN did a report on this, and
yeah.
they used the phrase black market.
Right.
And Young argues that that language implied that he was breaking the law.
Which he denies.
Which he denies, yes.
It's a complex case.
It is.
And it raises questions about the limits of journalistic freedom.
For sure.
And the potential for media bias. You know, proving defamation is a high bar, legally.
Yeah. You got to really show intent.
Right. Young would have to demonstrate that CNN acted with actual malice or reckless disregard for the truth.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in court.
It will.
It definitely touches on some very sensitive issues.
It does.
Surrounding, you know, media coverage, and especially in this kind of politically charged environment.
It's a case that could have significant implications
right.
for the way news organizations report on controversial figures and
yeah.
events.
Yeah.
Especially when those events are tied to sensitive political issues.
All right, so for a bit of a lighter note, let's talk about former President Trump's latest move, shall we?
Okay.
He's appointed Mel Gibson, John Voight, and Sylvester Stallone as special ambassadors.
To Hollywood.
To Hollywood.
Interesting.
What do you make of that?
It's a rather unconventional move, to say the least.
It is.
It's hard to say what tangible impact these ambassadors will actually have.
Right.
Especially yeah. given their somewhat waning star power in the industry these days.
Right.
But, it could be seen as a symbolic gesture.
Okay.
Maybe an attempt to bridge the gap
okay.
between the entertainment industry
uh-huh.
and the new administration.
Or maybe it's just a way for Trump to, like,
stay relevant.
Stay relevant. Yeah. Stay in the conversation.
Stay in the headlines.
Right. He's always been good at generating headlines.
He has.
So this is just another way to do that.
Yeah. It's definitely a shrewd move from a publicity standpoint.
It'll be interesting to see how Hollywood studios respond to this.
Well,
especially Disney.
Right.
You know, they've had their own kind of complex relationship with Trump.
They have.
In the past. And their upcoming Star Wars film is sure to be a blockbuster.
It is.
Could this appointment influence their creative decisions in any way?
It's a possibility. But, you know, Disney is this global company.
Right.
With a diverse audience. Mm-hmm. So they're likely to be pretty cautious.
Right.
About alienating any segment of their fan base.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of potentially controversial decisions.
Okay.
Let's shift gears and talk about PEPFAR.
Yes.
The AIDS fighting initiative in Africa.
An incredibly successful program.
Incredibly successful. It saved millions of lives.
It has.
But now it's facing this potential threat from Senator Risch, the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Right. PEPFAR has been this remarkable achievement.
It has.
Providing life-saving treatment and prevention programs to millions of people in Africa.
And for a relatively modest cost.
Relatively modest, $5 billion per year.
Yeah, billion dollars, yeah.
It's a testament to the power of global cooperation.
Yeah.
And the impact that well-funded initiatives can have on combating global health challenges.
Absolutely. It's a truly remarkable program.
It is.
But now Senator Risch is threatening to cut funding.
He is. And the reason he's given for this potential cut is, it's pretty surprising.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
Apparently, a single clinic in Mozambique,
okay,
which was receiving a tiny fraction of PEPFAR funds,
okay,
performed abortions,
okay,
which violates U.S. law.
So you're telling me the fate of this entire program,
uh-huh,
which has saved millions of lives, is being jeopardized?
Potentially, yeah.
Because of one clinic's actions.
It does raise questions about proportionality.
Yeah.
And the potential for political motivations,
yeah,
to overshadow the humanitarian impact of this program.
Right. So is Senator Risch truly concerned about this one clinic's actions?
It's hard to say for sure.
Right.
The timing of this threat coming so soon after a new administration takes office,
yeah,
suggests that there might be some broader political calculations at play.
It's a complicated situation.
It is.
And it really highlights how easily politics can get intertwined with these humanitarian efforts.
Yeah.
You know, so it's crucial to keep a close eye on how this develops.
Absolutely.
And, you know, advocate for the continued funding of this vital program.
It's vital.
It is. Millions of lives are at stake.
They are.
All right. So let's take a little step back.
Okay.
From the current political landscape and
yes,
delve into the world of political predictions.
Always fun.
Yeah. You know, it's always fascinating to look back and see what the experts got right and wrong.
It is a guilty pleasure, isn't it?
It is.
Seeing all those confident assertions just crumble.
Crumble. Yeah.
In the face of reality.
Electoral vote actually has this whole collection of predictions.
They do.
That went spectacularly wrong.
They do.
They do. It's pretty entertaining.
It is.
So, like, remember Derek Thompson's prediction that 2024 would be this, like, boring election year?
Oh, yeah.
I think we can all agree that boring is not the word that comes to mind.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Between the assassination attempt on Trump, Biden dropping out, and then Harris getting the nomination. I mean, yep, it was anything but predictable.
Yeah. And then there's John Harwood, who was so sure that Biden wouldn't pardon Hunter.
Oh, yeah. He was adamant about that.
Even after Biden himself said that he wouldn't do it.
Right. And then, boom, a pardon.
A pardon.
It just goes to show you that, you know, in politics,
right,
things can change so quickly.
They can.
And even the most, you know, ironclad pronouncements can be overturned.
Absolutely. Rob Reiner also had a pretty memorable prediction.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He said that a woman would give birth to a renewal of our democracy. He was so sure that Harris would win.
Yeah, I think he
Let his hopes
get the better of him.
Influence his analysis a little bit there.
Yeah, it happens.
It does.
To the best of us.
It does.
And who could forget Scott Galloway's prediction that Elon Musk would either lose control of Twitter or sell it?
Oh, yeah.
I guess he underestimated Musk's, like, determination to hold onto that platform.
Yeah, Musk is
he's tenacious.
Yeah, he's not one to back down easily.
No, he's not. Okay, this next one is a real head scratcher.
Mm.
Michael McKenna predicted riots in Washington and New York if Trump won.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't recall seeing any widespread unrest after the election results were announced.
Well, you know, predictions about social unrest are notoriously difficult to make.
Right.
There are so many variables involved, it's almost impossible to anticipate how people will react.
That's true.
To a given event.
And speaking of predictions that didn't pan out, George Conway was pretty sure that Trump would be imprisoned.
Oh, yeah. He had that whole timeline laid out.
Yeah, he did. With Trump losing his immunity case and going on trial in March.
Yeah, it's amazing how some of these predictions really reveal more about the predictor's own biases and desires
right.
than the actual likelihood of the event.
Yeah, we tend to project our own
hopes
and fear
onto these predictions.
Exactly, and that can cloud our judgment.
Yeah,
and lead to these inaccurate assessments.
Very true. Okay, let's wrap up this prediction postmortem with a few rapid-fire misfires.
Okay.
James Carville thought Trump would skip the debate.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Lutnick was certain that RFK Jr. wouldn't be leading HHS.
Right.
Nicole Killian expected a female running mate for Trump.
Hmm.
And Ari Fleischer believed that Nikki Haley would be the no-labels candidate.
It's a veritable graveyard of predictions.
It is.
Highlighting the inherent unpredictability of politics.
It is unpredictable.
It is.
And reminding us to maybe take these pronouncements with a grain of salt.
A big grain of salt. Yeah. All right. So for a change of pace, let's indulge in our weekly dose of Schadenfreude and Freudenfreude.
Oh, yes. A delightful exploration of those contrasting emotions.
They are contrasting, aren't they?
They are.
Where should we begin?
Let's start with some Schadenfreude, shall we? What? Our star this week is State Senator Colton Moore from Georgia.
This guy. He's made a bit of a habit of landing in this category.
He's a repeat offender. If I recall correctly, he was even banned from the House chamber by his own Republican colleagues.
You recall correctly?
Did he really?
Yeah, it seems like even his fellow Republicans can't stand him.
Wow.
But during Governor Kemp's State of the State speech,
right,
Moore decided to crash the party.
Oh, no.
Even though he was explicitly told he wasn't welcome.
Oh, Colton.
So guess what happened?
I'm going to guess he got arrested.
You nailed it.
Of course.
And to make things even more satisfying.
What could be more satisfying?
He ended up in the same jail as Trump.
I can only imagine the social media frenzy that ensued.
Oh, the irony is just...
It's too delicious.
Very delicious.
Okay, so now for a dose of Freudenfreude to lift our spirits.
Okay, I meet that.
Yeah, let's turn our attention to State Representative Vinton Jones from Texas, one of the first openly gay black men elected to the Texas legislature.
That's fantastic.
He's been on the front lines, you know, fighting against this wave of anti-LGBTQ bills
right.
during his time in office.
It's a tough job.
It is a tough job. But amidst all this negativity, Jones chose a really powerful way to celebrate his recent reelection.
Oh, how so?
After being sworn in for his second term, he proposed to his partner right there in the legislature.
That's beautiful.
It was a beautiful and defiant act of love
in the
face of such adversity.
It really was.
And in Jones's own words, he said, "In a time when our love and our very existence are challenged often in the halls of this very building, this moment is a reminder that love conquers all."
Powerful words.
They are powerful words. Well, that brings us to the end of another deep dive.
It does.
We've covered a lot of ground today.
We have.
From Senate races and media maneuvering to political predictions and even a touch of Schadenfreude and Freudenfreude.
A little bit of everything. We hope you've enjoyed the ride.
Yeah, as always, we encourage you to stay engaged, stay informed, and never stop asking critical questions because, as we've seen today,
right,
the world of politics is full of surprises.
This is never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment.
Yeah.
So until next time, keep exploring the world with a curious mind, and remember, even amidst the chaos and uncertainty,
right,
there's always room for hope and a little bit of fun.